It's a joy to be here all the way from England. I flew in yesterday. Thank God there's no jet lag coming to this country. It's 1 hour difference. I can do that. I have a home in America, and I spent a lot of time in Australia and the Far East, so my life is jet lag central. So coming here, I'm like, yes, 1 hour difference. I can manage that. I've heard great things about this church and about your leadership, and kind of feel very at home here with what I've heard already. I hope you can come tomorrow night, because one of the driving passions of my life is investing in and growing big people. I don't mean physically. You can do that all by yourself. But maybe you can't all by yourself grow you, because to grow you, you have to be courageous enough to figure yourself out. Because not everybody grows the same way. Not everybody grows from the same things. People don't grow at the same pace and rate. So there's no one size fits all on growth. And we have built far too many one size fits all churches. And it's killing people, as is our education system killing our kids, who are building a one size fits all approach to children whose intelligence is not measured at all by whether they pass a test or not. And I'm going to be speaking about that too tomorrow night, in how we grow our children. This church, you know, don't you? This church can't be any bigger than you are. And you do know, don't you, that this country is going to struggle, as is ours, as is all the countries of the world, that can't really grow any bigger than the people who lead us. And many countries are trapped under the limitation of the smallness of the people in charge of those countries. And so we all have a vested interest in everybody growing, everybody flourishing. And so tomorrow night, that is going to be what we're going to take a couple hours doing. This is a seminar I now take all around the world, because I don't think it's our job as leaders to grow the church. It's our job to grow people. Because if I can grow you and you and you and you by talking about things that make sense and that matter in a way you understand. You know, great preaching does not grow churches. Talking about what matters grows people in a way people understand, and giving you something you can use before you hit the car park is our job. So if I can grow people, I figured out big people, I've got to be good for everything they're attached to. Because big people have more confidence. Big people take more risks. Big people have a larger social circle. Big people are flexible. Big people are emotionally inexpensive. Yes. The people you love most in your life, you haven't figured out why yet, but you need to text them today. I figured out today why I love you so much. You are so low maintenance. Thank you. Thank you. I love you. And boy, have we got some drama queens in the church. I'm just talking about the people who are here for a start. High maintenance people and growing people are low maintenance. And I've realized that is my gift to everybody in my world. So, come tomorrow night, little preview there. That was worth 20 rand right there. Now, where's my timer clock? Do I have a timer clock? What's happening? Has it started yet? Well done, thank you. Because that wasn't really my speaking time. That was just my hello, how are you, getting to know you time. Because I've got half an hour in which to bond with you, say something significant to you, sell you things. You know, these are USBs. George called them flash drives. That's whatever you know them by. I have to explain around the world, these USBs is not a new political party. It's a piece of technology. And small is beautiful, because this is like 60 hours worth of teaching on one USB. If you're old school, want to see more for your money, we'll give you 60 CDs and a wheelbarrow. And help someone give you help to get it into the trunk of your car. That's how much stuff is on these. And this won't last long. Before long, there won't even be these. They'll just back you up to a port put a chip into your neck, like these sci-fi movies, and download stuff to you without even having to buy anything, plug anything in. But for now, this is as good as it gets, almost. So this is called Soar With Your Strength, the blue one. This is about investing in and growing people, but finding out specifically what God made you good at. If you can find out what God made you good at early on in life, here's what will happen. You'll get to do for a living what you love. Instead of hating your job and living for weekends that you love. We want that to be reversed in our kids' lives. We want our kids to do what they love and get paid for it. Because if that happens, you know what? It will save our health service billions. Because if you're a medical person in here, you know how many sick people come to see you whose sickness is not physical at all. You can't do what you hate every day for years and it not make you sick. So this saw with your strength, like a bird saws, figuring out what you're good at and how to become brilliant at that all of your life really matters. So that's the blue one. This purple one is for teenagers, for and about teenagers. If you Google teenagers and, don't put a third word in, just put teenagers and, see what Google thinks you want. Nothing good comes up. Because we expect so little. And our teenagers' reputation is so poor in the world. We've got to expect more from our kids. They're not a generation in waiting. This is their time and it's their turn. And we have to expect more from them, which means we have to invest more in them. So the purple one is for and about teenagers, parents of teenagers. Teenagers, you need to get this. I know teenagers, you got no money, unless it's your parents, or you're a criminal. Either way, we'll take your money today because you're going to be helped by this. This is called Wisdom for Life. This isn't preaching. It's just stuff I wish someone had told me. It's about 50, 60, 5 to 8 minutes. Here's a heads up about stuff I wish someone had told me. Things about aging well, as you can see I am. Some of you are looking forward to heaven when you get your glorified body. Some of us have ours already. You're welcome. Anyway, things about kids and handling money and handling teams and handling pain and handling stress and just stuff I wish someone had told me about. What would I say to a younger version of me? What would you say to a younger version of you? What would you go back to your teenage self and say, hey, I am now 45, heads up, I wish someone had told me what I'm going to go back and tell my younger self. All that kind of stuff is on here. So anyway, invest in yourself. And I've got several books. I've written 8 books. I'm an author, you know. You're welcome. Crossing Over, probably one of my best known books around the world, about the reinvention of our local church. As George said, I pastored for over 30 years. And in the late 90s, I started a new church inside the old church. Not good for your health. But that's what we did. And we had a good church, having a great time, and that was the problem. That we were inward looking, we were having our own great time, unaware that we were becoming slowly, but more definitely irrelevant to a lost world. And 98% of our country are not in church, and are anti-church, 98%. So we've got a lot of work to do. So this is about the reinvention of our church and your business and your organization and whatever you're involved in, the principles of Crossing Over will apply to you all. Okay, if you're glad the commercials are over, say amen. Me too. I am on social media. If you don't follow me on social media, you won't go to heaven. Maybe overstating that a little bit, but it's somewhere in the neighborhood of that level of severity. So let's keep in touch through that means as well. I'm going to read to you from Luke 7, verses 1 to 10. And we're going to parachute in for a few moments to this significant encounter Jesus had with this centurion's servants and this centurion's staff. And it says, Jesus entered Capernaum, and there a centurion's servant, whom his master valued highly, was sick and about to die. The centurion heard about Jesus and sent some elders of the Jews to him, asking him to come and heal his servant. When they came to Jesus, they pleaded earnestly with him. This man deserves to have you do this because he loves our nation and has built our synagogue. So Jesus went with them. He was on his way to the house when the centurion sent friends to say, "Lord, don't trouble yourself, for I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. This is why I didn't even consider myself worthy to come to you. But say the word and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority with soldiers under me. I say to this one, go and he goes, and that one, come and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." When Jesus heard this, he was amazed. Everybody say amazed. He was amazed at him, and trying to turn and turning to the crowd following him, he said, "I have not found such great faith even in Israel." Then the men who had been sent returned to the house to find the servant well. I want to talk to you about something I've called the centurion factor. The centurion factor. Sometimes as a speaker, as a communicator, you have to invent terms that sum up what it is you want to speak about. I guess from this passage, we could talk about lots of things that would be familiar territory to us. I think what I'm going to speak to you about is familiar in terms of it being to do with faith. But so that I don't lose the significance of my angle, I want to keep it away from the familiar ground of talking about faith and call it the centurion factor. Because this man brought something to the table on this day in Jesus' life that I find fascinating, that I want you to think about today. And I want to say up front that I don't think this church could have got to where you've come to without a strong element of the centurion factor kind of faith that we're about to look at here. Here's what's going on. To paraphrase this, we have a centurion who has a problem he can't fix. He's a man of considerable power and influence as a Roman military commander. So he has available to him his immediate sphere of influence, his staff, his household, his servants, his resources that were represented there. He has the, no doubt, network of relationships within Rome beyond himself to fix problems of this nature. But he has a servant, a staff member. We don't even know whether the staff member was male or female. And of course, the subheading in the Bible tells you the centurion's servant. But as we just read, that's the least of whom this story is about. Because we don't know anything about the servant. We don't know what the nature of the sickness was, why this staff member mattered so much to the centurion. We don't know what happened at the point of the miracle or after in recovery. We know all of those things and more about people that Jesus healed, but we know nothing about the person here who got the miracle. So clearly the passage is not about the servant. It is about the centurion. And he decides he needs help. And he reaches out to the local leaders, the local pastors, elders of the local synagogue. Now remember, he is not a Jew. Not only is he not a Jew, he is a Gentile. Not only a Gentile, he's a Roman military commander. He's several spheres removed from, if you like, the kind of person who would walk into this building today. He is a rank outsider with a problem that despite his resources and his considerable wealth, this man was very wealthy because we just read, didn't we, that when the elders approached Jesus on his behalf to help him, they said to Jesus, "He deserves you to help him." Not that Jesus perhaps needed that coaching. Maybe they thought Jesus would be reluctant to go to his house. And so they said, "He deserves you to help him, because he loves our people, he is sympathetic to what we are trying to do as the church, and he even wrote a check and financed our synagogue." Did you catch that bit? This guy was of considerable financial means to the degree that he wrote a check for the church building. How many would be open to that happening? How many of you would be open to an unsaved, unchurched business person in the community writing a check for your next church building? Would you be open to that? Seriously. If you're not open to it, then the chances of it happening are less and less. You know why that happens less and less, don't you? Is because the church doesn't have any friends like that. Because especially if they're outsiders and they're in a role of life that we have demonized, we've said, well, he's got to be corrupt because he's a politician, because we know there's plenty of corrupt politicians, but not all politicians are corrupt. Not all people in some sphere of life, that one-size-fits-all thing that we do, are stereotypically guilty of the same stuff. So we could do that with this people and this centurion, but there are lots of these people in this community that have got more money than they know what to do with, and the clock's ticking on their life, and they would love to invest it in something that is a legacy for this community, and they finish up giving it to the dog's home, to the cat's home. And we love dogs and cats, but people are more important. Don't be writing me letters about that, you dog and cat lovers in here. And so this centurion was smart. He built relationships in every sphere of life where he may need something as he aged and as his influence grew. And now he has a servant he can't sort out, a medical problem, but he knows someone who can help him. He doesn't know Jesus like some of you didn't know Jesus, but he knew someone that did, like some of you knew someone that did. And through that network of interconnectedness, you finished up in this church. You know, you are the closest thing that many people will ever get to Jesus. Don't be praying for them to have a revelation of God. That's why you're in their life. You are as close to God as they'll ever get. I know. Some of you are clapping, but you don't clap when you're on your own out there and saying to God, you've got to have somebody better than me to do this, Lord. I'm so sorry. I'm such a disappointment to you that I'm the only Christian in my place of work. You must have better options. No. You are all God's got. You are the best God's got. And you'd be surprised how much God can use people who don't think they're any good at all for God to do anything. So these elders come to Jesus, and he sets off to the man's house. We don't know how far the journey was, okay, between where Jesus was and the man's house, but he sets off to the man's house. Then the centurion's sitting at home thinking what he's set in motion and has a second idea, an upgrade on plan A. He comes up with an upgraded idea. And the second delegation intercepts Jesus and says, look, don't come to my house. I don't need you to do that. I kind of figured out this, that while I was sat at home, after having sent the first delegation to ask you to come, I was sat at home thinking, hang on a minute. I understand authority. I am a centurion. I have staff, soldiers under me. I am also under other people. I understand authority works like this. Now granted, this is a very military, black and white idea of authority, but it worked for him. It was a command and obey idea. But he said, I tell someone to do something and they do it. I don't do it myself, nor do I go with them and stand next to them to make sure it's done. That's not how authority works. So he figured out that in the same way he sends people to do stuff, and in the same way he gets instructions sent to him in letter form from those over him in the government of Rome or the military of Rome, that when the letters came and he read the letter, on the foot of the letter was a seal, a Roman seal, like your signature. And the seal in that time and culture, the seal was the authority of the person that sent the letter. So he figured this out, that for power and authority to work, it does not require physical presence. He'd figure that out, hadn't he? He thought, well, when Caesar writes me a letter, he doesn't come with it himself and sit in my house and make sure I do it. He knows that his seal is as good as his presence. And if I don't do what's in the letter, I can be in serious trouble. He knew that. So he figured out, well, this guy Jesus, from what I hear, is a man in and under authority. So in the same way that I send one of my staff members to do something, I think he could send one of his words. And one of his words could behave like a staff member. And his word could go ahead of him to where he sends it, in this case, my house. He could send his word and it would go and do what he told it to do. He surely doesn't need to come to my house himself. So this is what the second delegation told him. Don't clap, I haven't got time. This is what the second delegation told him. They said, so say that to Jesus. Now, when the second delegation comes and he hears that news, this is where the amazement factor comes in. His amazement is to do with what I'm calling the centurion factor, which is this. This is amazing, one, because of who's asking for help, an outsider, which was once many of you in here. When you asked for help, when some people in the church that knew you, that had written you off as a no-hoper, heard you were asking for help, they were staggered. And so he's interested, fascinated, surprised, perhaps, at who's asking. But here's what's more amazing. This is the first time ever Jesus has healed anyone without being physically present. I know we read our Bibles and just flick the page. It's my job to let you know that I don't flick the page. If it says something like he was amazed, I figure this. If human beings can amaze God, we ought to at least figure out what it was that amazed him, just in case we can reproduce it. Because I've got to tell you, God, when you're omniscient, all-knowing, and omnipotent, all-powerful, you must be hard to impress. So for God to be amazed, I am interested in the ingredients of the amazement. And what's amazing, Jesus, is that he had only ever been physically present, laying on a hand to heal someone prior to this. No one knew. No one even knew that this was an option. No one even knew that this was possible to do. And the centurion suggested something, not knowing that it was impossible, not knowing that it wasn't an option. He just, from his understanding of authority, suggested something that was a shock and an amazement to Jesus and his whole entourage, including the apostolic team, who, when they heard the delegation suggest, Jesus, don't come, just send your word, I think the team who knew that that was impossible, the team who had been with him for all the miracles up to this point, where they'd watched him go and lay a hand on, and where, by the way, we're going to do the same thing, because he's on his way to the man's house. So we're going to do the same thing we always do. We're going to go to the house. This is what the elders told the centurion. This is how this thing works. This is our territory now. Jesus comes to your house. He'll lay a hand on the staff member, and then the good stuff happens. So you got to get him to come to your house. So Jesus is on his way to do the same thing, business as usual, would have still been a happy ending. The servant would have still got a miracle. It would have been a great story in the Bible. But on this day, business as usual was hijacked. Jesus was planning to go to the man's house. The man sent a second delegation to stop him. The centurion factor is the kind of faith that gets God to do stuff no one knew that God could do, would do, or even should do in some people's opinion. Because some people didn't think Jesus should be helping people like this. The centurion factor is human interruption of divine intention. He's intending to go to the man's house, and then a man comes up with a suggestion that stops him continuing with his idea. And Jesus, it seems to me, when he heard, just send your word, it seems that Jesus kind of went like this. High five, I can do that. I can do that. Now, here's where this gets interesting, if not scary, for us, for the church. The only person who knew that he didn't need to go to this man's house. The only person who knew that he could speak a word and not go to the man's house was Jesus. But he did not say anything. How scary is this? Because what this means is this. Jesus would sooner walk down roads he does not need to, for your benefit, rather than force something on you that was not your idea, that you're not comfortable with, even though it's a better idea, it's a faster answer, it is unique and outside the box, it is magnificent in its genius. And Jesus knows he didn't need to go to the man's house. And I wonder how many roads God, as it were, is walking down in our lives personally and corporately that he does not need to. There's a better idea. There's a better way that he knows. And here's the frustrating thing you need to know about God. God knows there's a better way to get something done, and he won't tell you. Because he knows he doesn't need to go to the man's house. He knows that. But he doesn't say, hey, there are options here, one of which is, I don't need to come to your house. Now, let me just say this so that you're on the same page on this. You do know, don't you, the people in the Bible did not know they were in the Bible. You ever thought about that? I think we think people in the Bible kind of knew they were, and they're acting something out, so preachers have something to preach later on. These people were in real time, because our problem when we read the Bible is we don't read it in real time. We read it in hindsight, which makes us flick the page after something massive just happened. We kind of flick the page. And our job as communicators is to put you on pause and say, whoa, back up. What in the world just happened here? For Jesus to know, I don't need to come to your house and go to your house anyway, how many thousands of house visits is he doing? How much business as usual are we settled into when God knows there's better ways to get things done? This turns the whole word of faith and the whole faith thing on its head. Because we have been taught that when it comes to a miracle, our role is relatively passive. God's role is the one that is, he is the miracle giver, he is the deliverer, he is the savior, he is the healer, he is the provider. So our job is just to believe and persevere and hope and have faith. That's kind of what we feel our role is. But this guy has knocked that out the park. This guy's saying, I don't just have faith that you can do something for me, which is what I set in motion originally. I have faith that you don't need to come to my house. Because this whole thing called Christianity does not operate according to God's ability. It operates according to your faith. And if there's a gap between where your faith stops and God's ability, we live in that deficit all of our lives. Which doesn't make you a bad person or make our churches bad churches. It just means that when the church down the road or the other believer that you hear a story about or a book you read, when they do something that is outside the box, that hijacked divinity, the interrupted business as usual somewhere in the world, and we're looking and think, wow, that's amazing. That's an incredible move of God. I think God's saying, well, I'm not stuck in a geographical location. I am just responding to centurion factor suggestions that I knew I could do, but it has to come from you. It can't come from me because it wouldn't be then your faith. I'd be then forcing something on you, and you'd be like, what is this? Why? I was just comfortable with you coming to my house. This doesn't feel right. In fact, some would call this not God, not of God at all. Because methodology-wise, it's so outside the box, people are threatened by it. He spoke a word. That's not going to work. That's not, you can't call that a miracle. You can't call that Jesus has to come to your house. You know, have you ever thought you know someone really, really well? And then they do something, in a good way, I mean. Don't be going negative on me now. I thought I'd let it set up a minute, let you go negative, then pull you back. Just to teach you maybe how we gravitate to, oh yeah, those terrible people. I didn't know they were gamblers or smokers. Somebody you know really well, and then they do something, and you think, what? I didn't know you could do that. Some years ago, we were reaching out to the university campus students were in our city. I was in a coffee shop with my friend Bill, and Bill and I were talking about reaching the students, and I'd known Bill for like 15 years. And as we got up to leave the coffee shop, about a dozen or so Chinese students came in and sat down, all sort of talking in Chinese, and they must have been new students to our city coming on one of the degree courses that they wanted. So we get up to leave the cafe. What happened next amazed me, like this guy amazed Jesus, because as we're leaving the cafe, Bill walks over to these kids, starts speaking to them in fluent freaking Chinese. I don't mean a word or two Bill had picked up and thought he'd try out like a party piece. I mean, fluent freaking Chinese. I was so shocked, I was upset shocked. The upset bit was, Bill has been holding out on me. I waited outside the cafe, venting inside, building up this pressure of how I was going to say to Bill, how in the world could you not have told me? Now, in case you're thinking, there must have been a clue that Bill could speak Chinese. Did he have Chinese heritage? Did he look Chinese? Had he spent time in China? Did he learn Chinese language? Did he like Chinese food? Was there any clue? Okay, we're in Yorkshire. Think of the Shire and hobbits. That's Bill. How Chinese is that image? That's Bill. So don't be thinking you must have missed the clue. There were no clues. Bill comes out and I'm like, Bill, what? What just happened? How in the world? What did you just do? Bill, you speak Chinese. Ooh, Bill, you speak Chinese. How come you speak Chinese? I have known you for years. You never told me. Bill, why? Why in the world didn't you tell me you speak Chinese? Bill, in his calm, irritating way, said to me, because you never asked. That was it. Bill was done. You never asked. And Bill was done with it. I'm like, so I said to him, why would I ask? Like as if I missed something. God is like Bill. God speaks Chinese, but he will not tell you. God can do stuff. God doesn't need to come to your house. God's got different ways and means of doing stuff. God speaks Chinese, but he will not tell you. And he will walk with you for 15 years. And he'll shock you because, no, we really ain't got time now. He will shock you. He will shock you because you will hear rumors, or you may witness it yourself, of God speaking Chinese somewhere else, God doing something somewhere else, and you're going to say, what? What? I didn't know that was possible. I didn't know God would do that. And you might have a rant at God, and God would say it to you, like Bill said to me, you never asked. And so this centurion factor is getting God to do stuff no one knew God could do, because it has the audacity or the naivety or the foolishness, or whatever you may call it, to ask God to do something that the status quo, the business as usual people would say to you, if I were you, I'd just let Jesus do his thing. He knows best. It's no different to a parent with a child. Every parent in here knows when you watch your kids struggle that there's better and easier ways to bypass the struggle bit. But you don't intervene because you know now is not the time. I have to wait till they are struggling a little bit more. I have to wait till they've run out of options. I have to wait till they're exhausted. And then I might give a little bit of coaching. I wonder if God sometimes waits for us to get so fed up with business as usual. And by the way, that's where Donald Trump came from. Seriously. Because America got so fed up with business as usual politicians. The same in our country with Brexit and leaving the European Union, because we got so fed up with politicians not listening to us. One of my new seminars that I do around the world now is called Servant Leadership. Because our politicians and our leaders in all walks of life, including church and business and corporate, they have forgotten that you are here to serve us. I don't mean that you're a doormat for us. And what we've done is we have made people leaders who were not first servants. And you can't bolt servanthood on to leadership later. If you don't have it before you're a leader, you won't find it later. So that seminar around the world that I'm doing is trying to give a language to these massive mass movements of people all over the world are saying something to us. And people by their millions are saying, we have had enough of not being served by those that are supposed to be representing us, serving us. And I want you to know that God is a servant leader, that he's not here to impose on you his way of doing things, but he's very open to you having a new idea. I'm 3 minutes in the red. You know, the sun standing still was Joshua's idea. It was not God's. Who knew? Who even knew that was an option? Joshua just fighting a battle and the clock's ticking, it's getting dark. And in the advantage of nighttime, the enemy would disappear, live to fight another day, turn the page, just another piece of the narrative of history, okay. But something happened that day like it did with the centurion. A man that had a natural dilemma didn't make him a failure, or the events unusual. A man, Joshua, given that practical problem, not wanting to lose the advantage and to press the tipping point advantage, looked at the sun and shouted for it to stand still. What? What? I think the generals around him must have thought, you know what? This guy needs a sabbatical. Joshua has lost it. He's out of control. He needs a spa vacation. Sun, stand still. You know what God did? God went, boom, I can do that. High five, Joshua, I can do that. Well, if you can do that, God, why didn't you, just do it? Because you have not, because you ask not. Wow. Wow. And Joshua said, sun, stand still. And God didn't say, if you're going to ask me to do stuff, get your science right, because the sun doesn't move. Whenever I say that, people look at me like, you didn't know that. So what he's asking for is God to slow down the orbit of the earth around the sun, which slows down the whole universal orbital track of every planet's alignment if one is delayed, all the other planetary alignment is delayed. So he's asking God for something so fantastic, so phenomenal, so unnecessary. And God didn't say, listen, that is a ridiculously large thing to ask just to kill a few more bad guys. Get real. God didn't lecture him. You know, God will never lecture you for reaching. God will never force you to justify your reaching. He'll never rebuke you for your reaching, for your idea, for your suggestion, for your outside the box. People will. So be careful who you say in front of. Be careful who you tell and include. Some of you are losing your vision and your dream and your momentum because you have told the wrong people too early. And you have to learn the art of secrecy and keep it under wraps, even when you're so desperate to tell someone, whoa, hang on, be careful, because those dream killers are just waiting for a chance to jump on it and explain to you why it can't happen. Well, I'm 7 minutes in the red. This is so rude of me on my first visit. Let's stand together. Come on, time's gone. Let's get the band back up here. Where's the band coming up here? When we say get the band back up here, it gives people hope we finished. And we all need that hope. Believe me, I've been in some meetings where I wish the band would have got up sooner. As have you. Come on, every eye closed just for a couple of minutes. Father, we thank you for this story that continues to shout to us from the pages of history. And it may as well have happened today in its contemporary, now relevance to us in our desire to not keep doing business as usual life, Christianity, or church. I pray for the increasing outbreak of centurion factor faith in the life of this church. Thank you for this outside-the-box journey Father's house has had. This whole building is testament to that. And I pray that this centurion factor will not decrease, will not be a memory in the pioneer season of this church, but it will be part of the DNA of this house long into the future. This getting you to speak Chinese, a church that gets you to do things that other churches said he won't do, can't do. Getting you to do things here in this country that people said could only happen in America or Australia or somewhere else. And we know that's complete news to you, Lord. And I pray for an audacity in our asking. I pray for cheekiness. I pray for us to just be crazy enough to ask, why not? And why not here? Why not us? Why not now? I pray that that is not just something that people look to lead us for, but there's something that becomes the norm for every one of our lives, even in tiny, small things, not necessarily big things, just thousands of small things that accumulatively become a massive shift in the trajectory of our lives and our churches and our nations. In Jesus' name. And I'm going to ask finally, just all around the room, if you're here today and you've never given your life to Jesus, and that doesn't mean you gave your life to the church. I don't mean that. Or you were involved in religion. I don't mean that. Or you've been around a Christian family. I don't mean that either. I mean, you've never personally made your peace, made your stand, made your commitment, made your transaction with a God who loves you, who is not making his mind up about you today like you perhaps are about him. And so today, this isn't about, will God accept me? That was settled 2,000 years ago. You've been accepted by God from before you were born. So that's not what's going on here. And so this morning, if you're here and you're saying, yes, today's my day, this is my time, I don't care who I've come with, what anyone thinks of me, you may be that centurion guy. This is my time and my turn today. Or if you once lifted a hand and prayed a prayer, even in this church, but you know you weren't ready, you did it to keep someone else happy. You did it to keep a spouse happy, or parents or friends happy, but you know it was not something from your heart, then this moment's for you as well. Come on, with every eyes closed, because we were you. Recently or long ago, we were you. And so now we wait and we pause for you as someone once did for us. If that's you this morning, I'm going to ask you where you are all around the room. Will you just lift your hand where you are? Your hand's going to be saying, that's me today. I give you my life. I'm stepping up. Come on down here, over here. Come on over to the back there. Come on, someone over here, someone over here. Someone over there. Come on, just lift your hand if that's you. Anyone else in the room? You say yes to a God who said yes to you a long time ago. Come on, all across the room. Someone over there. Someone there. Someone at the back. Someone else there. Fantastic. Thank you, Father. Everybody look at me. You know what? Let me just say this, and I'm not setting policy for this church. It just occurs to me to say this to you everywhere I go. Listen. If lifting a hand doesn't suit you, we understand that. Wouldn't suit me. I'm too introverted to lift a hand. Seriously. We don't care how people come to Christ. We just care that you do. And if our methods get in your way, we want you to ignore us. Seriously. And find your own way to come to Christ. Because we don't care. We just have ideas and opportunities that we offer. But it's not a one-size-fits-all. So if you need to talk to someone, you want to just make that decision privately and then let someone else know, we may figure it out a month from now that you did. We don't care. It's not about hands going up to make us look good. It's about you finding your way to Christ, sometimes in spite of our methodology. We're very cool with that. So thank you. Let's give a welcome to everyone who lifted their hand today and say thank you to you for doing that. Yes. And if you didn't lift your hand, but in your heart you're like, I'm there, find a way to come to know him. And if we can help you, we'd love to help you. Thanks. Going to see you guys tonight. Go strong. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another Father's House podcast. For any more information, please visit our website at www.fathershousesa.org or connect with us on any one of our social media platforms.